Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much, Justine. It's such a beautiful introduction. Always makes my heart go pitter-patter. I love you so very, very much. Well, I tell you what's uppermost in my mind is that a truck sideswiped a cedar tree on my road and tore a whole branch off. And there's this big cedar branch laying down on the ground. And it made me remember the cedar oil that I made last year. Actually, it was the beginning of this year, 3/13/13, and of course today is 11/12/13, so how interesting that I made this cedar oil, 3/13/13. Cedar being an evergreen, you can make an oil of it any day of the year. And I also, back in March, made some smudge by tying some cedar together. It was another branch that had somehow gotten knocked off, a different tree, not the same tree. So that's kind of what's on my mind today is working with the evergreens and the evergreen trees and thinking about writing an article about that. And, of course, my mentored students last March had a whole month-long segments on cedar and juniper and the uses of the needles, the bark, and the berries as well. And I think those materials are still on file. So if you're a mentored student and you joined recently, you could go back and find all the information that I have about cedar there. Welcome, everybody, and welcome, Rebecca.
Hello, Susan. I'm looking forward to exploring some of the cedar oil myself now.
Okay, good. The very first cedar oil that I was...
Go ahead.
The first cedar oil that I was ever given was in this tiny little bottle I think it was like a half gram bottle, really the smallest bottle, and said sacred cedar oil. And I was told that I was to put a drop of this sacred cedar oil on each newborn baby that I encountered.
I love the cedar trees here. They are really beautiful. And so what would you use that cedar oil for?
Well,
other than dropping it on the babies.
My sense is that cedar talks very easily and very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really invite you to go and become friends with cedar. And rather than treat the plants as objects that we use to begin or to increase your ability to perceive of them as friends and allies and beings who are there to certainly to offer us help. But mm-hmm. And we love to help each other, but we also kind of bridle if we think somebody only wants us because we're helpful to them.
So after I talk to the cedar tree, how would I go about making the cedar oil?
Just like you make any oil at all, the fresh green parts of the cedar in a jar and fill that right up to the top with oil. I use mm-hmm. pure olive oil, but any oil that you want is fine. And I put mine in like a little bowl because even though it's got a really tight cork in it, oils are messy. And sure enough, there's oil all in the bottom of that bowl. And I can just barely make out the label, which is soaked in oil.
All right.
I think there's going to be a few people calling in tonight because a couple of people have told me they were going to call in.
Yes, there's somebody waiting here with a question.
Be waiting. There we go. So let's go ahead and answer that call.
Okay. So it looks like a Skype caller. It's a 111 area code. And you are on. Is somebody there with a Skype maybe or not a traditional telephone number?
If you're waiting,
anybody
waiting
for a question at all?
Yes.
Hello?
I am waiting. My name's Aranda.
Hello, Aranda.
Hi. Thank you so much, Susan. I have your books, and I'm a follower of yours, and I have a question. I was wondering if you can help me with helping my mother. My mother's 93 years old, and she's a diabetic, and she has a diabetic foot wound, an ulcer on her foot that is not healing. The doctors can't put a stent in to bring more blood down because she's in a fragile condition. And then they wanted to amputate her leg, but they can't even do that because she's fragile. And I was wondering if there's maybe a salve or something that we could do for her because she's in pain also.
I'm sure that she is in pain. We just recently in our community had a very similar situation, although the woman was not that old and did mm-hmm. wind up with the lower part of her leg amputated. Mm-hmm. She, however, did not have a daughter who was taking care of her. She had a variety of friends who were, came and went, but all of whom had a difficult time dealing with what was going on, and she herself was not very proactive. Now, we certainly give your mom a pass in being proactive because she's past the age where we demand anything, right?
Right.
Right. It's like, okay, you made it home free. And now you don't have to do anything to justify yourself. You don't have to be useful in any way at all. We'll just take care of you because we so honor you as you move into that, into your 90s and beyond.
Right.
So let's start out and look at this from the six steps of healing.
Okay.
The first step of healing is do nothing. And that means to rest more. Does it help the ulcer if her foot and leg are propped up? Does it help clear it? Does it help her? Is she in less pain if her leg is positioned high?
No, she seems to want to dangle it, like off the side of the bed sometimes, or she feels that, and also the doctor had said that you would get more blood circulation if you kept your foot down.
She kept it down, okay. So this is part of step zero, discovering what is restful.
Okay.
What eases it? Sometimes we have kind of a puritanical sense that we should just kind of, you know, tough it out or so. But my mentor, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, was very, very much into pain relief and whatever was necessary for pain relief. And she really championed patient control of morphine.
Yes, she does have some serious pills, you know, that... I don't know what, oxycodone or something like that. Every once in a while, my brother will...
Oxycontin.
Yeah.
Highly addictive painkiller.
I know. My brother gives her, like, scrapes off a little tiny bit when she's in extreme pain, and she takes it that like that. But again, we just said
she's home free. She can get addicted to drugs. It's okay now.
That's what I said. Anything but
it's
pain,
fine.
That's where I come from. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know? So what are we talking about here? She's going to be addicted for what, another 20 years? You think she's going to live to 110?
Well, her mother, my grandmother, lived to 104.
Okay. And she and your mom's how old now?
93.
So that would be 11 years that she would be addicted.
But she's not as healthy. My grandmother was... a rarity and ate very purely and ate from her garden and never ate leftovers or never ate out of a box and just lived a different life, you know, I think. And also she died with, wasn't even on any medications. Her body just kind of pooped out at the end.
And your
She's
mom
very,
was on medication, diabetic,
yes,
and there's
before,
a lot going on. There,
yes,
exactly.
Tons of stuff, like tons maybe 9 different meds, yeah.
Right. Now, I had a friend who was diagnosed with metastatic cancer. They thought he'd be dead in 2 weeks. And I said to the hospice workers, give him morphine. Give him morphine until this man is smiling.
Right.
All right. And he cursed me because he lived for 2 more years addicted to morphine.
Oh.
I said, small price to pay. Small price to pay.
That's correct.
You know, I don't think you can remember how much pain you were in. I don't think your body would let you remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so definitely, you know, whatever we need to do to get her to have less pain, not waiting until she's in extreme pain to give her the OxyContin, but seeing if you can get a prescription for her own OxyContin from the doctor.
She
and
does.
Giving it to
she has one.
Before she's in pain.
Yes.
It's not as effective if you wait until the pain is already there.
If you wait. Okay.
So use it sooner rather than, I mean, this is what I mean about our kind of, puritanical sense of, we should just tough it out. No, we really don't have to tough it out in any way.
Right. Okay.
Not required. So then the next step is to collect information. And some of the information we know, which is, this occurs because in diabetes, the circulation to the legs and the feet slows down.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally sugar in the blood. It's like putting sugar in the gas tank of a vehicle. It makes everything sticky. And it's already a little hard for the blood to get up from the extremities. That's not the easiest thing in the world anyhow. And then with the sugar in the blood, it becomes harder for the blood to move, therefore harder to heal, and the sugar in the blood feeds bacterial infections. So when there's a sore or a cut, then it gets bad fast because of the sugar in the blood.
That's correct. And she has blockages. She has congestive heart issues and circulation issues. So,
yeah. So, herbs that can be helpful in improving circulation that are kind and gentle for fragile people would include hawthorn, and that could be hawthorn leaf and flower infusion or hawthorn berry tincture.
Okay.
All right. If your mother is anxious in addition to having circulatory problems, then motherwort might be a better choice because motherwort builds more capillaries, thus improving circulation, and it's also calming and anti-anxiety.
Yes, she's very anxious and depressed.
So motherwort would certainly be a better choice for her.
And wants to die. You know, top it all off.
Well, is there some problem with that?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I just want to help her. I want her to be as comfortable as she could be.
Well, if she wants to die, are you willing to help her die?
I don't know.
Yeah. My mother said to me, I want to die. And I said to her, then set your feet on that path. Look ahead of you and look down that path and you will see your husband there. He's just as you remember him, handsome, funny, and he's got his arms wide open and he's waiting for you. And on one side of him is, and I talked about one of her sisters that she loved, and on the other side of him is, and I talked about another one of her sisters that she loved. And I said, now look down and look at the path and start walking. And you'll know that you succeeded when you're in your husband's arms.
Hmm.
And about 4 or 5 hours later, the nurse, the male nurse came to put more antibiotic in her IV. And I looked at that nurse and I said, she wants to die. Don't do that. And I burst into tears.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse said to me, you don't know how happy you've made me.
Really?
Don't know how much I wish all children loved their parents the way you love your mother. Instead, children come in here and torture their parents, trying to get one more day, one more week, one more month out of them when all they want to do is die. He said, your loving support of her wish to go has made my day, if not my week and my year.
Okay. So what do I do?
You support her wish to die. You say, I understand you want to die. I'm willing to help you.
Okay.
How do you want to die? Where do you want to be? Do you want to be at home?
Home in her sleep. Yes, she always said that. Yep.
She wants to die in her sleep. Then do you two start meditating on her dying in her sleep?
Okay.
You create what you want. What does she need to do before she dies?
Probably nothing.
Ask her.
I will.
Yeah. And comfrey is a wonderful healer of wounds.
Okay.
Right? Even if she's going to die, we can relieve her pain and work on healing her wound. If for no other reason than for our own satisfaction and interest.
And that's in a gel? Because I have seen that in health food stores. I've seen comfrey homeopathic gel.
I prefer, if at all possible, to use fresh comfrey. And if you don't have access to fresh comfrey, then dried comfrey leaf. I don't like to put any kind of gel or cream on a diabetic ulcer wound in the leg or foot.
Okay.
I much prefer to have them soak the wounded area in a comfrey leaf infusion. And there's YouTubes and information on all my books about making infusions.
Okay.
And if it, where sorry, you told me, but I don't remember where the ulcer is.
On the side of her foot and on her heel.
And on her heel, so she can easily soak that. You can easily pour the comfrey infusion, warm it up a little bit so it feels comfortable to her, and just have her soak her foot in it.
Even though her doctor said don't soak her foot, because we were soaking her foot in tea tree oil and different things.
Oh my gosh, how awful.
What?
Oh.
I did something wrong with the tea tree oil? I did, right?
Oil is a caustic that destroys flesh.
Oh, no oil ever. Got it.
Essential oil. It's an essential oil. It's a drug.
Okay. So
not
is there
safe,
so
natural.
No, don't use it. But the doctor said don't soak a foot at all. Don't put it in any water.
I understand.
But not that we agree with him, because we don't. We're like, really? So it's confusing.
I understand. I was going to say that an alternative to that is to make a compress. So you soak
okay.
a cloth in the infusion, and you apply the wet cloth.
Okay. Could do that.
So give us a call back and let us know what's going on, okay?
I will.
Thank you
so much.
You're blessed.
Take care. Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right. It looks like there's somebody else waiting with a question here.
Yeah.
In the 416.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, hey, guys.
Police!
What? Hello?
You have really insulted me.
What? Hello?
Hello. I am not a guy.
Oh, so sorry. Apologies. Hello, Susan.
I am a woman.
How are you doing tonight?
I was doing just fine until I was so rudely addressed.
I'm laughed at
because I feel bad. I'm being laughed at.
No. I'm laughing because it's just something that I typically just say without even thinking about it. No one's ever questioned, so I was just taken by surprise.
What's your question, please?
So I had sent you guys an email just to let you know.
Don't call me that. I do not want to speak to you.
Oh, I did it again.
I don't want to speak to you. You can call back another time.
Okay. I'm sorry.
All right. Let's go to the next caller in the 734 area code.
Oh, great. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, I'm so honored to talk with you, Ms. Weed. I'm so excited to speak with you in person. Amazing.
Thank
you. I actually have a question about. I'm nervous because I'm so happy to talk with you.
Thank you.
I had a cesarean section unexpectedly about a year and a half ago with my first daughter. And I've been really struggling healing, and most of it is emotional, but I have a hard time knowing if my internal parts are healing properly because I can't see them. And so I guess I'm wondering if you have any suggestions, herbal suggestions for helping to heal my uterus and the scar internally, because the outside looks great. It's a little tight. And I heard you talking about comfrey with the last woman, and I thought, well, and I have comfrey growing in my garden, but I didn't know how to use it. So I'm wondering if that might be helpful, but if there are anything, any other suggestions?
I think that's a great idea. How long ago did you have this cesarean?
Last May. In 2012.
June, July, August, September, October.
So about, it's almost 18 months.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. So it's almost 18 months.
18 months.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly can't hurt yourself by using comfrey, but I agree with you completely that this is 100% mental.
Mm-hmm.
This is 18 months ago.
I had a hard time even touching. I know. I had a hard time even looking or touching at the wound. Yeah.
So, was the cesarean needed?
I don't even really know. I labored for 55 hours, and that was just at the hospital. Before that, I had been laboring for about 12 at home. So it was a really long labor, and I was told at the end that the baby was in distress and she had a bump on her head, and I was about 8.5 centimeters dilated. I think I might have even gotten to a 9, and I was still ready to keep going, but once they told me that the baby might be getting hurt, I felt like I couldn't do it anymore, and she was in a posterior position, and that was another reason. So, yeah, I guess I've struggled even feeling like that was even necessary to have the cesarean. I would have preferred to just keep going naturally.
I'm having a little difficult time understanding what you're saying here, because I thought you just... Once you heard the baby was in distress, you wanted the cesarean.
Oh, no. I never wanted it, but I didn't want my baby to get hurt.
Then you did want it. You can't have it both ways. You either say, I'm not going to have a cesarean even if my baby dies, or you say, I don't want my baby to get hurt, so I'm going to choose a cesarean. So how does it serve you to pretend that you didn't make this choice? What kind of story are you telling yourself? Are you telling yourself that somehow you're a failure as a woman because you had a C-section? I don't understand. Really? What your difficulty is here. I understand you are that it's very difficult for you, but I don't understand the nature of that difficulty.
Well, I guess I feel like I chose it because a mom sacrifices instead of puts her needs first, I guess. I didn't want to go in there, but I wanted her to be born healthy.
Are you telling me that you resent your child because you had to make a choice to have a C-section?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Are you telling me that you resent your child because you made a choice to have a C-section?
Probably. I haven't even...
Let's work with that then.
Okay.
I think that's very important to recognize and to deal with. That right away in this relationship with your new baby, you were asked to do something you didn't want to do at all. Now, it's pointless for us to rehash this in any way. I mean, certainly we could sit here and say, well, you know, if you had had a midwife or a doula or someone there who was supporting you, they could have said, well, 9 centimeters, for goodness sakes, we don't have to wait to 10. Push! Push now!
Right.
And you could have gotten the baby out with some support. It's absolutely true.
Right.
But you didn't. For whatever reason, you did not have that support. And it's pointless to say if.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no if, there is what is. And what is that you had your baby by C-section, as hundreds of thousands of other women have. Was it needed? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Did you decide to do it? You did. Were you frightened into it? Probably. It was your first birth. You won't go unprepared to your second one. You'll have someone there who supports you and what you want to do. Because you now know it's not a safe place for birthing women. But what is done is done. You are healed. Mm-hmm. Drinking comfrey won't hurt you, but the healing is long since done. What isn't done is the resentment you feel towards this child because you did something you didn't want to do.
That's really true.
And you don't want that resentment poisoning your relationship with your child.
No, I don't. I really don't.
No. So what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross used to have us do was to take a Manhattan phone directory. I don't know if they even published Manhattan phone directory. They were extremely thick. And a rubber radiator hose. And beat the rubber radiator hose upon the phone book with great vigor. And I have seen, you know, mothers beat up dead babies. You know, mothers who had stillborn babies. Really seriously upset and angry at their baby for dying.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, they didn't just walk in and say, oh, I'm really angry at my baby for dying. No, most of them totally denied it at first. But it's there. Of course we're angry. Of course we're resentful. And once we experience that emotion, once we give it a place at the table, then it doesn't rule our lives anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I had a woman who come to me and say, oh, ever since I gave birth to my child, I have had terrible, painful, burning vagina. It's like my vagina is really angry. And I said, your first child? She said, yes, my first child, except for the stillbirth I had. I said, who? And how, what was the time between the stillbirth and the second child? And she said, 10.5 months. That's pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and have you worked through your anger at your baby for being born dead? And she looked at me as though I was a monster who ate children. And she said, how can you say that about that poor innocent angel that I killed? And I said, excuse me, in the story you told about the birth, you didn't do anything except give birth to this baby, which then refused to breathe. You didn't kill it.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, I am so totally responsible. So you're not responsible at all. And this is what we can do for your vagina, but it's none of it is going to work until the anger that's in your vagina comes out because you're really angry at this baby for dying on you. And it took about 1.5 years before she was willing to admit to that anger.
Mm-hmm.
And once she did and actively worked that anger, and you don't have to use a rubber radiator hose and a phone book. You can use a piece of rolled up newspaper on a mattress. That works too.
Yeah.
But we have to actively engage with that anger.
Yeah.
And certainly, as soon as she was willing to do that, her vaginal problem was gone.
It was gone.
Wow. Yeah, I've been able to, I was acknowledging anger with, like, the anesthesiologist and everyone. I was screaming, I'm frightened, and I felt like no one was even hearing me. Like, everyone was deaf, and I was angry at them, and I was angry at the doctor.
But they possibly hear you. They're frightened, too.
And
give them a break. They're human beings.
I was angry at my doctor, my doula, my midwife, everybody, but I
except
never even...
Except the person that you really need to be angry at.
Exactly.
What?
Exactly.
So drink some comfrey infusion. Drinking infusion on
okay.
a regular basis is a great idea.
Okay.
I drink a quart of infusion every single day.
That's awesome.
It'll make you feel better. It'll make everybody around you feel better. And find some way to manifest.
Now, do you two, can I use the fresh comfrey from my garden for the infusion, or should I dry it first?
Infusions must be made from dried plants.
From dried herbs?
Dried plants only for infusion.
Dried plants, okay.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for being so honest and
thank you so
much,
Susan, for being with
able
me and
to do this. It's very, very hard. The feelings that you're dealing with, they're not easy, and they're not easy to share and express. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Green blessings.
You as well. Thanks.
Okay, we have a couple more people waiting on here with questions.
Okay.
All right. In the 541 area code.
Okay, that would be me.
Hi.
My name is Jody, and I wanted to say thank you so much for sharing your lovely story about your mother. I feel the same way that you do, but I'm so glad that you shared it, because I'm sure that a lot of people out there were probably actually really shocked by your story. And that story, like many other things that you say, always make people think, and it's always good when people have to think.
I truly believe that because women give birth, that is our responsibility to give death.
To give death.
And that when women refuse to give death, because death must come, then men have to do it, and they don't give birth, so they don't know how to give death. Instead, they murder, they butcher, they kill. If we want to see an end to war, then every woman needs to be willing to metaphorically pick up the knife and give death.
Yes, my cousin died last night. But I knew that she was miles away and in the hospital, but I went out in the moon, and I wrapped her love around me, and I sang and danced with her and gave her permission to go.
Ah, what a beautiful thing you did for her.
So I so much appreciate your story about your mother, and I hope more people will think about all the things that you said and think about how loving of a thing that was. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Green blessings and good night.
Good night.
All right. Let's go to the next caller.
Okay.
In the 503 area code.
I think that's me.
Yes.
All right.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for taking my call. I'm crying over the last few calls. So.
Yes, what an emotional evening we're having. How marvelous.
Yeah. Well, and I work in a hospital, and I do CPR on people, and so many times I wish that families were able to let go of their family members that should have been able to go comfortably instead of... That wasn't why I'm calling, but thank you.
I've had people in your situation tell me that they have had to quit their job because they simply felt that they were abusing people.
Many times I feel like I'm helping people, you know, because it's the appropriate decisions. You know, sometimes families make the right decision, and sometimes I get to watch them go peacefully, and I get to witness that, and it's really a beautiful thing, you know?
Oh, how marvelous.
So what I'm calling about is I'm 36, and I'm really pretty healthy. I drink several quarts of infusion a week, usually Natalie Linden, and they've made me feel a lot better. You know, it's made my depression go away, and my boys are being wild. Made my depression go away. I feel a lot better. But over the last few years, I've gotten some swallowing trouble, and I had a whole bunch of testing done trying to figure out, because I choked so bad that I passed out at work and hit my head on the floor and got a really bad concussion. And so what they've found is that my
Choking?
Choking, yes.
Like kind of gagging and choking.
Yeah, the food gets stuck. And
okay,
then,
so this is only when you're eating?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Only when I'm eating.
Okay, go ahead.
So the muscles, like, there's places where the muscles don't work at all in my esophagus, and there's places where it works weakly but the right way. And so I'm working on a lot of, like, emotional kind of triggers that maybe are happening, but I'm looking sort of for any kind of help at all. That I'm too young, and I'm worried about my health, you know. I'm aspirating on liquids, and I don't want to have a huge surgery, but I'm exploring that option too, and it's really scary.
I really hear you. My chakra teacher called the throat chakra the bottleneck. Good term for it, isn't it? The bottleneck. She says it's where stuff gets stuck. You know, we were working with like a really big group, about 125 people. It was pretty amazing. There were like 123 people on the floor screaming, all right, and only like three of us who were avid enough truth tellers that the work didn't bring us to our knees.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most brilliant work-throughs on this that I've ever participated in was done by a woman who is part of a group that I belong to, where we spent 7 years pursuing seven goddesses. And we met for a week out of each year. And we would do a lot of emotional work together during that week.
Mm-hmm.
And we had been up at our temple, and we came back down to our workspace, and the lights were off in the workspace, and there was a woman standing by the door with a lit candle. And she gave each one of us, as we entered the workspace one by one, a lit candle. And when we went in, we saw another of our members lying on the floor, taped to the floor.
Oh.
With masking tape. And the masking tape was running across her body, right? So it was across her eyes, across her nose, across her lips, across her shoulders, across her breasts, across her, right, and piece after piece after piece of masking tape, taping her to the floor. Yeah. And when we all came in and stood in a circle around her, as we had been instructed to do by her helper, who was at the door and giving us the candles, her helper went to the piece of masking tape over her mouth, ripped it loose, and she said, "I'm stuck with my lies."
Wow.
And as she spoke, her lies, her helper removed piece of masking tape after piece of masking tape after piece of masking tape. Until at last there were only the number of pieces left of women standing there.
Oh, wow.
And she looked at us and she said, "I am no longer stuck with my lies. The only thing left that is sticking me down is your lies."
Mm.
And we were each invited to come up one by one, remove a piece of masking tape, and to reveal any time we had lied to her. What goes on in the throat can be as simple as that. As simple as the lies that we have chosen to tell. As simple as the times when we haven't spoken out.
Yeah, that's been too many.
Meanwhile, Slippery Elm is the great healer of the esophagus. I don't know whether or not it would be effective for you and what you're experiencing. So I'd like to ask you to be the guinea pig.
Okay.
Slippery Elm is completely safe. It's nutritive. It will do you no harm of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it will get your muscles working again, that I can't tell you, but I'm asking you to tell us.
Okay.
You can go to YouTube, and you can see YouTubes of Slippery Elm balls being made, most notably by my granddaughter, Monica Jean.
Uh-huh. I've watched her video. She's cute.
She is great. So you've seen her make Slippery Elm balls.
I don't think I've watched that one, but I've watched several of the other ones that she's in. So
right.
I'll find that one.
Find her making Slippery Elm balls and make some Slippery Elm balls. It's as simple as buying Slippery Elm powder and mixing honey with it. And somebody was just here over the weekend for our work exchange weekend, and she said, oh, I don't have good access to honey, so I use maple syrup. I said, yeah, well, like most people have better access to honey than maple syrup, but how nice to know that maple syrup works too.
My naturopath wants me to be eating coconut oil too. Can I mix that in there too?
In general, my understanding is that it's not a good idea to add oil to the diet outside of using it in your food.
Okay.
So if your naturopath wants you to use coconut oil, let's assume that your naturopath wants you to use coconut oil in your food.
Okay.
Not in addition to your food.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we start eating fat in addition to our food,
mm-hmm.
the consequences are not pleasant.
Okay. So just Slippery Elm and honey mixed
together.
So
the naturopath wants you to eat coconut oil for your throat?
She said that it's good for the whole digestive tract, that the types of fats that are in there actually contain a specific substance that's a food for the digestive tract.
Hyaluronic acid.
Yeah.
Is one of the things there. And she's suggesting that you use that instead of?
She just said I should be getting about a tablespoon a day in it. And I see her again in a week or two,
uh-huh.
so I can clarify what she's wanting. So probably you're right. Probably.
What kind of fats are you using right now?
Generally olive oil and butter.
That sounds excellent. And there's certainly no reason that you couldn't, you know, substitute out some of that, some coconut oil.
Mm-hmm.
The Slippery Elm is a far more effective food.
Okay.
In terms of the actual food. And I guess I missed it. Your digestive tract was involved. I thought it was just your esophagus.
Well, I had my gallbladder out, and I have diarrhea off and on from the gallbladder coming out. And if I eat enough fiber, then it's better. And if I don't eat enough fiber, then I have trouble sometimes. You know, it gets grumpy. So I think that was kind of what she was thinking about, was just soothing. But the Slippery Elm would be soothing for that part of things too as well, wouldn't it?
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
All right, so you're going to give us a call back in, you know, a few weeks or so and let us know what has happened. Like, after the beginning of the year, will you give us a call back and let us know what's up?
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Blessings.
Blessings.
All right. No more callers for the time being, so let's move into some email questions.
All righty.
All right. Says, "Dear Susan, you are a planetary treasure. I just wanted to take a moment to express my sincere appreciation for you and your wonderful work. My life and that of my family and friends are forever enriched because of the wise woman wisdom you so generously share. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Green blessings and gratitude and admire."
Aww, that's so nice.
Very nice. Thank you for all of your generosity. So we'll go into the first question. "Dear Susan, hello again. I met you at the Southeast Wise Woman Herbal Conference. My husband and I are enjoying the benefits of your infusions. Thank you for your inspiring, informative, and entertaining presentations there. I would like to ask a question of you for my daughter. Jamie is 35 in seemingly good health and would like to have children at some point. She was recently diagnosed with a very rare condition."
Stop, please.
Excuse me?
Mm-hmm. Stop, please. I don't do secondhand consultations.
Okay.
All right. So I will make some exceptions. Somebody calls and says, well, I have, you know, like an infant. Well, of course, you know, then I'm going to talk to the mom because the infant is incapable of talking to me. Or we talked about somebody's mom who's, what, 93, you know, and unlikely to be calling me. It's a 35-year-old woman. If she's interested, please have her call.
Okay.
And perhaps I'm missing something. Perhaps her condition is such that she's unable to call.
No, it says she has a very rare condition, Reed syndrome, also known as hereditary leiomyomatosis.
So it is my very, very strong preference to speak to the person who has the problem.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's move on to the next question. "Hi, Susan. In 2011, at the age of 30, I was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, which has made me infertile. Just recently, I was doing some research for natural ways to increase my fertility level and came across your name in an article about red clover and some other herbs, fennel, holy basil, and vitex. Today, I purchased a bottle of red clover. In addition to the red clover, what else can I take to maximize my chance of conceiving as soon as possible? Is there a remedy you suggest for women with my condition? Thank you."
A bottle of red clover will do you no use at all, because it's not red clover tincture that we want. It's a red clover infusion. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is something that I have a chapter about in my newest book, Down There. And I urge you to get the book and read the information that I have gathered there, because there's quite a lot of very interesting information about PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I'm going to go to the help box. Each chapter in this book is so loaded with information that I have, for each chapter, created a help box so that you can quickly and easily find and start with the very best remedies for any particular condition, and then read the chapter and personalize that for yourself, because each one of us is different, and you'll find some things that are going to be more effective for you than for anyone else. So here's the help box for polycystic ovarian syndrome. Expect results within 2 to 4 months. First of all, remove all vegetable fats from your diet, all seed oils from your diet. No soy oil, no corn oil, no cotton seed oil, no sunflower seed oil, no hemp seed oil, no almond oil. If it's pressed from a seed or a bean or a grain, do not have it in your diet. This could cause some chaos in your diet, but a great number of processed foods contain vegetable oils. Instead, I would like to see you eating animal fat. In fact, fact, although I don't say this in the help box, because your particular question has to do with being fertile. For women with polycystic ovarian syndrome who wish to conceive, I urge you to eat animal fat at every meal. Eggs are animal fat, butter is animal fat, cheese, full fat milk, full fat yogurt, as well as fish and meat itself. Some source of animal fat at every single meal. If you can pull it off, animal fat 4 times a day is even better. What else? Take 2 to 4 dropperfuls of Vitex or Sol Palmetto tincture on a daily basis. So if you want to get a bottle of something, Vitex or Sol Palmetto would be the bottle of something that you get. Now, of course, if you're going to take 2 to 4 dropperfuls, that bottle, which contains 40 dropperfuls, is going to be gone in 10 or 20 days. In other words, it's going to only last for a week and a half to 3 weeks, depending on how much you take. So you might want to check out the information in down there about how to make your own tincture of Sol Palmetto or Vitex, which is a lot less expensive. Making your own tincture, usually you wind up with tincture that has cost you about $1 an ounce, and you can compare that to a regular retail price of between $12 and $15 an ounce for tincture. You'll see it's really easy to do and cost effective. In addition, take dandelion tincture as needed. Now, this, of course, is a, as I said, the help box is a general recommendation. And dandelion tincture can do a variety of things for women with polycystic ovarian syndrome. The male herbalists that I talk to are strongly into the connection between the liver and polycystic ovarian syndrome, and so that's why the dandelion tincture is there. If you have heavy bleeding, here's some herbs for controlling that, and drink 3 to 6 quarts of nourishing herbal infusion on a weekly basis. There is certainly so much more, but I'm just going to add one thing from the text, and that is avoid soy. Nutritionist Dr. Mary Enig says polycystic ovarian syndrome is strongly related to consumption of soy products, especially soy-based infant formula. And Dr. Naomi Baumslag, president of the Women's International Public Health Network, says the amount of phytoestrogens in soy products varies as much as tenfold, and the soy used today has way too much isoflavones for the health of most women. Red clover infusion, not the tincture, is wonderfully helpful for all women wishing to get pregnant. Green blessings.
Okay, we have quite a long letter here that's somewhat related to the last question. So, dear Susan, I've talked myself out of writing a few times now, telling myself I needed to be patient and try listening to my body for an answer a bit longer. But I just experienced one of the most difficult periods in my life and has left me completely and literally drained and shaken. 2.5 years ago, I had a surgical procedure that included a myomectomy and the removal of an ovarian cyst. My uterus and ovaries were left intact, although my OBGYN urged me to have a hysterectomy due to the Aiden meiosis, which had been detected during a pelvic exam, because she said there is little that can be done to treat this condition. Since the surgery, I had debilitating menorrhagia, passing clots, and moderate to severe cramping every month. My periods are still somewhat regular, and the bleeding has never lasted for more than 24 hours, but it has left me quite anemic. This is an account of my physical condition, but I'm equally concerned about my spiritual and psychological toll. This has taken on my normally strong and self-reliant Taurian nature. After all, blood is the life force. This September, by chance, I came across your work while researching natural remedies for fibroids and spent the next few days watching all of your YouTube videos and reading articles on your website. I bought Healing Wise, the new menopausal years, along with a tincture of Shepherd's Purse. After reading Healing Wise, I decided to ally with Stinging Nettle because she seemed to be a good friend to women with bleeding issues. I bought a pound of dried nettle at Catskill Mountain Herbals and began drinking a quart of infusion every 2 days. My period was due toward the end of the month, and instead of the deluge, there came a gently trickling stream with little or no clots and barely any cramping. It lasted longer than usual, more than 2 weeks versus the usual 5 to 7 days, but I was happy and relieved nonetheless. To not be bent over and bedridden, soaking through a maxi pad every 45 minutes, and anxious about going anywhere other than the toilet or the shower was like having a weight lifted from me. I actually felt freer and more at ease in my body than I had in years. Then came October. I knew something was different this time around because my midsection was swollen and tender. My hardened abdomen looked like a 5-month pregnancy, and I was cramping badly enough that I needed Advil and the hot showers to sleep. My nettle infusion, what seemed to soothe and comfort me the month before, was having no such effect this time, and then the bleeding began. Light, dark, almost rusty spotting for a day, followed by an increasingly heavy flow, even flooding at some points, that lasted nearly 36 hours. I decided to seek assistance from Shepherd's Purse. 4 to 5 drops under the tongue, about an hour later, my uterus began contracting, causing me to run to the bathroom where I sat on the toilet, expelling blood and clots until I thought I would pass out. This was interesting to say the least, but I thought it best to hold off on any more tincture. I would also like to add that I cried more in those few days than I have in years. So many feelings welling up inside me and pouring out in a profusion of tears and blood. So now that I've given you some background, here is what I need your wise counsel on. I am too overwhelmed and tired to seek my own just now. Was this episode just an anomaly, or was it a gift from Stinging Nettle? How could her nourishing powers have brought me such relief and hope 1 month, only to leave me a bit worse for the wear the next? And what about Shepherd's Purse? Should I try it again if I bleed heavily next month? I have never experienced uterine contractions during my period and have certainly never had explosive bleeding like that before. Any suggestions would be gratefully accepted. I'm so glad that your wild green wisdom has rooted itself on our beloved Mother Earth, Susan.
Rebecca, at any point in this letter, did this woman say how old she is?
She does not say how old she is.
It makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Makes an extremely big difference. This is actually fairly normal behavior for a menopausal woman. I know it doesn't seem normal at all, but then again, menopause is not exactly a normal time of our life. It's the menopausal time of our life. So my experience is that what I'm listening to, what I'm hearing in this letter is a woman who has eaten a deprived diet, either a raw food diet or a vegan diet or perhaps a very strict vegetarian diet for far too long, who needs to get some real meat into her diet, who needs to go out and buy some liver. Nettle can do what nettle can do, but it can't do the heavy lifting. It can't do, well, what did she say? Blood is life. She needs to eat things with blood in them. Perhaps I am on the wrong track, but my decades of experience suggest to me that this is the most common answer for what this woman is talking about. This, of course, is another situation that I deal with in down there, the wise woman way. And we talk about heavy bleeding and what causes heavy bleeding and the specific things that we can do to deal with that heavy bleeding as well. We're on page 214, heavy bleeding, flooding, menorrhagia. Help. Expect results within 5 to 15 minutes. Take a tincture of shepherd's purse or cotton root bark. And let me go to the text here and get a little bit more, see if we have any more information here. Nothing specific, and that's partly because I deal with those herbs so thoroughly in new menopausal years, the Wise Woman Way. So Shepherd's Purse is a uterine contractor, and it stops bleeding by causing uterine contractions. 4 to 5 drops is hardly a dose at all. Most midwives suggest a full dropperful of Shepherd's Purse tincture, and that would be the amount that I would suggest. And so Shepherd's Purse tincture, which is fairly easily available, but must be made from the fresh Shepherd's Purse. If you're buying a tincture that someone else made, check on the label and be certain that it's made from the fresh Shepherd's Purse, because most herbalists agree that tincture made from dried Shepherd's Purse is completely useless. In addition, in our help box, to something that can help immediately, within 3 to 5 weeks, we will get help from drinking 3 to 6 quarts of nettle or raspberry infusion weekly. And you might want to try 4 tablespoons of cod liver oil daily for no more than 2 weeks. So it is quite important to understand that if you have been a vegan or a vegetarian, that you are probably quite low in vitamin B12. And vitamin B12, when the level is low, it directly leads to flooding and menstrual cramps, but it also interferes with your ability to absorb iron and other needed nutrients in your body. Again, vitamin B12 is found only in animal products. The kinds of things you're talking about are usually end points of women who have limited their diet. Cinnamon stops hemorrhage. It's specific against menorrhagia. A large spoonful in a cup of water generally acts quickly. It is a hemostatic. It is not a uterine contractor. And so if you want to be prepared with some powdered cinnamon, there's certainly a lot more going on here than I can even begin to address in the amount of time that we have. And with you not right here, on the telephone. I hope that this more general information has been of some assistance to you, and you might want to consider taking a correspondence course so that we can be in touch over a longer length of time. Each correspondence course comes with 3 hours of talk time with me. Or you might want to consider looking at my offerings at wisewomanmentor.com, where you can move into a mentored situation where you have a series of talks with me, and that way we can work together in a way that it's a little difficult or impossible for me to do on a blog talk show. Green blessings.
Okay, next question. I recently became a contributing blogger to Mother Earth News online blogging content and wrote an article titled Homemade Cough Syrup, which was about making cough syrup from elderberries. After publishing, I received comments on how the photo was of pokeberries, not elderberries. My kind elderly neighbor informed me of the supposedly elderberry tree, and I weakly did my own research to make sure she was correct. Unfortunately, we were both wrong. After possibly giving editors a headache and having everyone tell me pokeberries are toxic and they will kill me, I am curious why I never got sick after consuming what I guess to be a half cup's worth in 2 weeks' time. I boiled the berries, smashed them, and strained the seeds and never felt ill to any degree. I also eat all plants and like to think I am in touch with what is going on with my body. After reading your article titled Herbal Adventures, Poke, I have many more questions about what other articles say about the toxicity of poke berries. What I would like to ask is, why do you think I did not get sick? And do you believe poke berries to hold any nutritional value? Thank you for your article and thank you for your time.
Well, I have to say that I start off extremely confused here. The saying that pokeberries and elderberries look alike is like saying that grapes and pumpkins look alike. They are so different. I truly cannot comprehend how anyone could confuse them. Poke has bright pink, thick stalks. It has very big, fleshy leaves, and the berries come off in sprays which droop down, and the berries are large and look rather like an Edam cheese. The seeds of pokeberries, as with the seeds of a great many fruits, are poisonous. In fact, there was a man who saved all of the seeds from all of the apples that he ate until he had a quart of them, and then he ate the apple seeds and died. So quantity is a lot what we are talking about. And different people reacted differently. I'm having a hard time believing that you could mistake poke for elder. Elderberries are tiny. They don't come off on a raceme. In other words, on the poke, there's like a straight stalk with the berries coming off of it. And on the elder, all the berries kind of come down in a kind of drooping cluster. Elderberry leaves are compound with a great number of different leaves in one leaf. You say that you did research about this and yet were unable to tell elderberry from poke. Something is screwy about this story. There's something here that I'm not getting. There's something you're not telling me. There's something wrong here. I don't know what to say. There's just something kaflooey about your story. Nobody could really confuse elderberry and poke. Green blessings.
Okay, there's somebody waiting to ask a question.
What do you think, Rebecca? You know these plants, yes?
Yeah. He did actually say that he did his own research.
Oh, I completely understand.
Yeah. Well,
oh, it's me. All right. So, sure, men don't pay much attention usually, and so, of course, they could confuse anything. But we're going to have to then say that when he says he did some research, he's just lying.
Yeah, and then he said that, unfortunately, we were both wrong, that him
what?
And his elderly neighbor were both wrong. So they still didn't identify what the plant is, but he's still thinking that it was poke, so it's very confusing.
Very confusing, very confusing. Yeah. I don't something not okay. And publishing something when you don't know what it is? Ooh, please.
Very sketchy.
This is why I don't like my students to ever get herbal information from the Internet. Not even from my site gangs. The Internet is not the place to learn about herbs. Okay, we got some other questions?
There's a caller waiting on here.
Yeah, we have a guest coming up in about 20 minutes, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Paula Umel is coming on.
Mm-hmm. We'll be coming on in about 20 minutes. So we have a caller. Let's go to our caller.
Okay, in the 615 area code.
Hey, hello. Hey, guys.
I wish to talk to you. You can call back at another time when you can address me politely. Thank you. Next caller. Next question.
Hello?
Not a guy, and I will not speak to anyone who calls me a guy. You can call
I'm
at
sorry.
Another
time. I'm a southerner, and I don't like to say, hey, y'all.
You can call at another time when you can address me respectfully. Good night.
Hello, ma'am? Hello?
Yes?
Hello, ma'am?
Yes?
Would you like to speak with him further? Because I just muted him, so would you like to go ahead and try that call again?
I do not want to be called a guy by anyone, and I don't want anyone to defend it.
Okay.
No, I am not going to be called by a rude name. No. He can call back at a different time when he can treat me with respect.
Okay.
All right.
So we will move on to the next question here from the email. Dear Susan, I am a great admirer of your books and have learned so much from them. I am a doula and healer in the UK, and I would love to take one of your correspondence courses. However, I have a question about how relevant they are in the UK. There are one or two herbs in your books which are unfamiliar to me, and I'd be very grateful if you could give me your thoughts as to whether this would detract from what I am learning at all. As I am a practitioner, I feel that the Wise Woman Ways course would be the most relevant to me and my path. I look forward to hearing from you.
The spirit and practice of the Wise Woman Tradition Correspondence Course focuses on the three traditions of healing. And the three traditions of healing are not place-specific. The three traditions of healing are anywhere you live. You are going to find those three traditions. So I have students taking my courses who live all over the world. I don't think we have any country in which there isn't a student from that country. The Spirit and Practice of the Wise Woman Tradition course also focuses on the six steps of healing, also called the seven medicines. And those six steps of healing, those seven medicines, are the paradigm that I use in the vast majority of my books to move us along our path. Do nothing, collect information, engage the energy, nourish and tonify, stimulate, sedate, use drugs, and break and enter. As you can see, all of this information and all of this learning is not specific to any place on the planet. There are no specific herbal remedies in the Spirit and Practice of the Wise Woman Tradition course. You do work with some information about herbs, but that is more general information than specific information. Because my books are translated into a great number of languages, and because I teach all over the world, I include in my books and in my teaching a wide variety of herbs so that people, as I have mentioned, who live anywhere on the planet can make use of the teachings. Thank you so much for asking, and I hope we have an opportunity to work together. Green blessings.
Okay, next question. Dear Susan, I have read that loss of feeling in sexual organs can be due to imbalanced hormones, low testosterone levels, and low DHEA levels are cited as big factors, and I think that is my issue. I do not take hormone replacement of any kind. Are there natural ways to get these levels up to a strong range without hormones, or are there hormones that are natural and safe to take? Thank you so much.
There are no hormones that we know of that are natural and safe to take. I don't agree that you have a hormonal imbalance. I think that you are malnourished, that you are not getting the nourishment that you need. My favorite way to nourish people is to have them drink nourishing herbal infusion. I myself drink about a quart of nourishing herbal infusion a day, rotating through stinging nettle, red clover, oat straw, comfrey leaf, and linden. None of these, except for red clover, is thought to have a strong influence on hormones in the body, but all of them do have the influence of making our bodies better at creating the hormones that we need. Hormones are messengers. They tell other parts of the body what to do and when to do it. When we take synthetic hormones, the usual result is cancer. Bioidentical hormones are far worse than prescribed hormones in terms of side effects and repercussions. The Food and Drug Administration is coming down very, very hard on compounding pharmacies and is doing their best to actually stop what they are describing as a tremendous campaign built on misinformation going out to women. I think that you have indeed been the recipient of some of that information. And since most of us know precious little about our hormones, it's pretty easy for us to be swayed by people who appear to know what they're talking about. I think the thing to remember is that your body is not a series of cogs in a machine with any one cog that can be messed up and in need of being replaced, but in fact a very sensitive, interrelated, organic thing in which you cannot fuss with any one part without messing up some other part. That's why I prefer to nourish. When I'm nourishing, I know that the results I'm getting are the results I want, which is greater health, greater flexibility, greater adaptability, and a better ability all over for my body to produce and maintain health. Nourishing Herbal Infusions, and give them a try. Green blessings.
Okay, next question. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge on this radio show, and I would like to ask a question. I am a 60-year-old male and have had sinus problems for many years due to seasonal allergies, having my nose broken playing soccer and an orbital eye socket fracture from a fall 2 years ago. At that time, an ear, nose, throat doctor said there was nothing that could be done to repair it. Since the orbital fracture, I've had bad headaches and sinus infections. Recently, I went to my primary care doc and was told I had a severe sinus infection. She recommends a CT scan, but before that can happen, the sinus infection needs to be cleared up with antibiotics. I took them, and it seemed to help, but it is now back after just a week and a half of finishing them. No CT scan yet, and I haven't called her to say that the infection is back. I am ready to get off this roller coaster ride and am most appreciative for any suggestions you have.
Indeed, sinus infections can be a real drag and can be extremely difficult to deal with. The sinuses are little cavities in the head, and they're lined with mucous tissue, and there's supposed to be some mucus coming out of them and moving down the back of the throat and sweeping bacteria down. But if they swell up, if this mucous surface swells up, then the fluid can't get out of the sinus, and it sits there, and it's a prime place for bacteria to grow. And then we get a sinus infection and a headache and all kinds of stuff happening. So you have several reasons for swelling in your sinuses. First of all, trauma, and secondly, allergies. So it's kind of a double whammy, and then the sinuses swell up, and all kinds of things are going on. So we can see that one of the places that we can get a little leverage here would be to see if we can reduce the inflammation in your body, reduce the inflammatory things in your diet. There are a variety of anti-inflammatory things that I'm very fond of, and let's also talk about things that are directly inflaming. Linden infusion is a fabulous anti-inflammatory. As a matter of fact, it's one of the reasons that I include it in my rotation of 5 nourishing herbal infusions, is because I think that most people need a pretty consistent level of anti-inflammatory material coming into their bodies to counter the many inflammatory things that could be present in the environment, and especially for you who has seasonal pollen allergies. So linden infusion is pretty easy to make. There's YouTubes of me making it and harvesting it. You can find lots more information about that. Comfrey leaf infusion is also a wonderful anti-inflammatory and extremely healing for the mucous surfaces of the sinuses as well as the rest of the respiratory system. And comfrey leaf infusion, again, you can find lots of information in my books about working with that and how to make an infusion, as well as YouTubes of me making a comfrey leaf infusion and talking about that. Interestingly enough, I have found that herbalists who disagree on almost everything else nonetheless agree that the primary herb for people who are dealing with sinus problems is horseradish. That's right, horseradish, just like what you buy already prepared at the supermarket, and prepared horseradish is just fine. At my supermarket, there is prepared horseradish that doesn't have any preservatives in it, but you have to buy it with preservatives, okay. At many supermarkets, horseradish is sold throughout the fall and winter months, as well as you might find it at farmers markets. And you could grate your own horseradish. And the usual dose is between a teaspoonful and a tablespoonful of prepared, which means grated horseradish root, and it's usually grated and then mixed with some vinegar to stop it from oxidizing and give it a little bit of a sour kick. That can be spread on toast or put mixed with, say, a little bit of cream and put on vegetables as a horseradish sauce. But I think that you will find once you start consuming horseradish on a daily basis that you will have less problems with your sinuses. In terms of anti-infectives, in my book, Down There, The Wise Woman Way, I have quite a lot of information about working with plants instead of antibiotics. And that's because, of course, a lot of the things that are going on down there, it is often recommended that people take antibiotics. And so I thought it would be extremely useful to really give anyone who is interested in using herbs instead as much information as possible about that. And let's see. Here we are on page 342, instead of antibiotics. And I say of the most often used herbal anti-infectives, calendula, chaparral, echinacea, golden seal, myrrh, poke, usnea, and yarrow, it is echinacea, the lovely purple cone flower that I most often turn to. And then I talk very specifically about which echinacea I use, the preparation that I use, and the amount that I use. And for an acute infection, I take a full dose, and a dose is 1 drop for every 2 pounds of body weight every 2 to 3 hours. For a chronic infection, a dose every 4 to 6 hours. I talk about when I would add poke root tincture to that. And so if you do not want to take another round of antibiotics, and certainly if I was in your shoes, I wouldn't, since the first one was pretty weakly effective. And, of course, what's left is only the bacteria that are resistant to that antibiotic, so you'll have to take a different one, which will be stronger and could cause more side effects as well. Whereas I have seen echinacea, or in difficult cases, echinacea with a small amount of poke added to it, certainly counter the kind of infection you're talking about. And let's not forget cranial sacral therapy. Given what is going on with you and the trauma, in addition to the other things, I would think that a cranial sacral therapist would be a tremendous ally for you in your path of regaining health. Green blessings.
All right. Thank you so much. And it does look like Paula is here to join us.
All right. We have Paula Yomel with us this evening. She is a certified holistic health nutrition and fitness educator. She does Reiki. She's an herbalist. She's a yoga instructor. And she has a counseling practice as well. I think she's written a book, but I don't have the name of her book. Welcome to the show, Paula.
Oh, thank you very much, Susan. How are you?
Just fine. How are you tonight?
I am good.
Great. What is the name of your book?
The name of my book is the same name as my business, Hands on Health, and then it goes on to take your vibrant whole health back into your healing hands.
Wonderful. Wonderful title, Hands on Health. And if people are interested in getting a copy of Hands on Health, do they go to handsonhealth.com?
Hands on Health, HH, and the HH is for holistic healing. Hands on Health, holistichealing.com.
Hands on Health, HH. And
HH.
I see those two H's are capitalized. Is that important?
Well, it doesn't have to be capitalized. Just a girlfriend of mine said there's so many H's in your website address that when you capitalize the beginning of each word and the two H's at the end, she said it just makes it easier for people to get it all.
Okay, but
so,
it doesn't have to be when we enter that website address.
It does.
HandsOnHealthHH.com. So what brought you to the practice of what you call natural health?
Well, I think originally back when I was a child, I didn't, you know, you're not even consciously aware of it. My grandfather used to make all his own herbal medicines, and my sisters and I used to call him a witch doctor, and it was just a fun thing to pick on Grandpa. And then I went into nursing at 18, and my first patient, literally my first patient as a nursing student in the hospital, I was appalled at what we were feeding this gentleman, and I knew what was happening was not a healing thing. And at 18, I wasn't really entirely certain what would be, but I knew what was happening there wasn't healing. And from that time on, I've pretty much explored all kinds of things around whole foods and natural healing and really getting to the basis of what people's problems are instead of covering them up with drugs and surgery and... So that's how it got started.
So there are three traditions of healing: the scientific tradition, which measures and fixes; the heroic tradition, which cleanses and balances; and the wise woman tradition, which nourishes wholeness.
Yeah.
Which tradition do you work in?
Well, I'd like to think I work in the wise woman.
Okay. So you don't do cleanses, you don't encourage people to balance things, you don't take away important dietary foods from people. You nourish people and you nourish their wholeness.
I try to nourish their wholeness and their soul. I do recommend from time to time, depending on the person's problem, simple liver cleanse, but it's a very simple, gentle thing with real food.
Why don't you drop the word cleanse?
That's a good idea.
Why don't you call it a liver nourishment?
I like that. I think I will.
Because, of course, we cannot cleanse the liver. Every drop of blood in the body flows through the liver every hour.
Yes,
it's a flow-through organ, not a filter. Nothing ever gets stuck in the liver. To use the word cleanse in relationship to the human body only means to damage and destroy.
I like that. Liver nourishment plan. I'm going to change my
liver
little...
nourishment. Let's say it like it is.
Yes.
You're giving them foods that will nourish and strengthen their liver, yes?
I knew I would learn fun things from you.
So let's tell them that that's what we're doing. Because you know as well as I know that a lot of people's health problems stem from lack of self-love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
when we tell them they have to cleanse, we are feeding their lack of self-love.
That is so true. And, you know, it's funny, I always tell people that when we start out, you can't, well, I do, but you can't always get right into the emotional and spiritual issues that people have, and you have to kind of come in the back door. So I always tell them that we're going to start with the physical and work around their whole food and how to nourish their body with whole food and then start asking the questions that open up the door to emotional and spiritual issues around food and health and healing and nourishing, yes.
And nourishing. How wonderful. What kind of role models or mentors have you had on your path?
Well, first it was my grandfather making his herbal medicine. And then I have to be completely honest, Susan, when I was teaching in Syracuse, New York, I was teaching in the city school district there. I had students, this was my reintroduction to herbal medicine. I had students ask me about natural ways to deal with fertility, birth control, and I frequented the health food store that was right down the hill from the high school I was teaching in, and I went down on my lunch break that day, and my very first herbal book I bought was your book, Childbearing Years.
And thank you.
I love that book. I have given millions of copies of it to everybody who gets pregnant. You have to get that book. You have to get. Oh, here, I'll give you that book.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my God. That book just opened a world to me and brought home to me what my grandfather was doing in the kitchen. And I've got all your books. And have years ago, I bet it's been 17 years, I attended one of your weekend workshops in Albany. And that set me on my path that I knew there was a better way than the drugs that we were using in the hospital. And other healers along the way that I've, you know, Rosemary Gladstar, the gentleman who wrote James Green, the male herbal. Love
wonderful herbalist. Wonderful man.
Yes. That book is a fantastic book. So that's how I got into...
Soon after James' book came out, I was at the Breitenbusch Herbal Gathering, and he was doing a talk on, you know, herbs for men, because that was his book. And I went. I asked him, I said, is it okay if I come? He said, oh, absolutely. And, of course, I was the only woman there. And he said, you know, honor of Susan being here, he said, I'm going to reveal a secret to you all. When I sat down to write the male herbal, I had nothing to refer to. Right? And nobody else had written a book about herbs and men. And he thought, what am I going to do? He said, so I got a copy of Childbearing Year, and I used it as a guide.
I love it.
So
true. There is something there for men, you know, and there's still, really, to me, that's like the Cadillac
of men. And then, of course, I returned the favor in my most current book down there, and I said to James, I said, I'm really using your book as a great reference to help me here. Thank you so much for being a pioneer in that. So, Paula, what inspired you to write a book?
Well, I have been it was probably 20 years ago. I'm 48, and it was probably 20 years ago I opened my first, like, holistic counseling. It was around nutrition and herbs. And that kind of waxed and waned over the years as I was teaching in different schools, and then when I had my two children, that was where my focus was. And recently, in the last 2 years, I started working with people again and trying to help them nourish themselves through whole foods and herbs. And I was finding that I was telling people, teaching them, educating them about the same things over and over. And it flowed out of my head. Literally, I had the book written in 2 weeks' time, and then you know what happens after that, all the editing and crazy stuff. But I just knew
indeed.
I needed to put it down. And I
and now you have a book.
Yes.
Yay!
I know, yay. It's so much fun. Hey. And
what's the best thing that came to you from writing this book?
When somebody walks up to me on the street or I get an email or a phone call and they say, thank you so much. Your book has changed my life. I'm grateful for that. I'm healing my body. Thank you for putting it in a way that just made sense to me. And that makes it all worth it.
Doesn't it, though?
It does.
It's so, so important when we get that feedback.
Yes, it is. And knowing I had a book signing in Potsdam this summer, and this gentleman stood on the street. It was a sidewalk summer fest thing. And this gentleman stood on the street and talked to me for probably 10 minutes or so. And then he walked away. And as he's walking away, he turned around and he looked at me and he said, I'm going to get your book. And you know how you think, yeah, sure you are. And then 2 months later, I got an email from a really good friend of his. And she said, I can't thank you enough for what you've done for my friend Mark, because he's lost weight, he's changed the way he eats, and he's exercising again. And so he obviously meant it.
He obviously did and followed up on it. I'm going to put you on the spot, and you can jump off of it if you want to.
Okay.
But it would be interesting for me and the listeners to know if there's any... You said you found yourself repeating yourself in terms of advice.
Yeah.
So is there, like, a piece of advice you could give us all?
Oh, the big thing is that I tell
And again,
people
if you don't want to answer this question, it's okay. We can go on to something else.
Oh, no, no. It's eat whole foods. You know, if you just get the crap out of your diet and eat whole foods that are provided for you from local farmers and you're eating in season and they're real foods, that is a huge step. And when people do that and they start feeling better, it's amazing then the changes and shifts they'll make in their lives when they realize, I feel better, and then they want to feel even better. So eat whole foods.
Eat whole foods. Yes,
whole
we should
foods.
Have a bumper sticker. Eat whole foods.
Bumper sticker? Yes. Maybe I'll do that.
My friend talks about shopping with a First Nations friend, and they had bought some peaches, and then the First Nation friends came with a can of peaches and said, look at this, we can get peaches with extra sugar added to them and for less than we paid for the raw peaches.
Oh.
Right? And my friend looked at this other and said, are you joking with me? Are you pulling my leg here? because Native Americans are well known for their love of sweet things.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Oh, they are really. You want to make a dish they like, just pour a cup of sugar in it.
Well, no. Before there was sugar.
Seriously, my sweetheart makes a fabulous goat curry. And we were at Grandmother Twyla's, and we had agreed we were going to make goat curry for her. And we brought everything we thought we would need. But it turned out that we really did not bring everything we needed, because when he went to look for onions, there were no onions. And then he went to look for flour to, like, thicken the, you know. And he finally, after a long search, he found what he thought was flour. And he put some in. He stirred some in. It didn't thicken it, so he put some more in. He put some more in. He put some more in.
Oh, my God.
And then when we served it, right, he was like just a little, like, he didn't want to deal with it because it had been such a hard cook for him. And so we were eating, you know, like squash or something else, and everybody else is eating this curried goat and going, it's so good, it's so sweet, it's so good, it's so tender, it's so sweet. And it's only after about the fourth or fifth, it's so sweet. I thought, what is going on here? And I took some, and of course what he had put in was powdered sugar, not flour.
That is great.
Oh, that was the best curry they'd ever had, best meat dish they'd ever had, they said.
I bet.
So eat whole food, and let us be clear to you listeners, eat the whole food does not mean you have to eat the rind of the orange.
No, you don't have to.
No, well, the word the is not in there. It's not eat the whole food, it's eat whole foods.
Yes, eat whole foods. Although you
right.
can save the rind and dry it out and use it in baking.
Exactly, and I certainly do whenever I get hold of organic oranges.
Yes.
And another kind of put you on the spot question that you can sidestep if you want to, but do you have a favorite herb or herbs?
Nettles. I love singing nettles. And I think that's
would you
probably
be willing to tell us why you love nettles, though?
Well, I think in your book, Healing Wise, just the stories around nettles absolutely enchanted me. And I started finding nettles. And then the stories you hear from other people, you know, when you transplant nettles and you bring them into your yard and people are like, are you crazy? Most people try to get rid of them. Why do you want them? Well, because I make pesto out of it, and I make soup out of it, and I make tea out of it. And they look at you like you're crazy. But I absolutely love nettles. I use it all the time. I make nettle tea all the time, but I used it all the while I was pregnant for my sons, used it while I was nursing them. It really rang home to me, the whole healing thing with nettles.
Yeah,
nettle
is such a wonderful, wonderful plant. Now, if I said to you that I was going to improve my diet by eating a slice of carrot this week, what would you say?
A slice of carrot?
That's what I thought you'd say. Nettle tea is a slice of carrot. You need to make an infusion.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. Yes.
It's a slice of carrot. Nettle tea, it's nothing. It doesn't count.
Right. And I definitely make infusions. I just think of it. It always comes out of me as tea. I use that word.
Oh, but it's not tea. It's infusion.
Yes.
So you're weighing out 1 ounce of dried nettle, putting it in a quart jar, filling it to the top with boiling water, and letting it steep for at least 4 hours.
I let it sit all night long, and then I have this
wonderful.
Yes.
I often say that you can tell if your nettle infusion is brewed enough, and you put your spoon in it and stand straight up.
Yes. The darker, the better.
And I'm going to guess that you, like I, see amazing improvement in people who start consuming nettle.
Yes. If they will use it, some people, well, you know, some people just don't want to. They don't want to do the herb thing. But people who do, I have a lady right now who's got a lot of skin problems, and that's what I told her to start using was nettle and make her quart infusion every night and have it for the morning so that she had it to drink all day. And so far, so good. She said she can't believe how good she feels.
That's, of course, the great thing about nettle is that it makes one feel so energetic.
Yes. And then again, people, once they feel good, they'll change other things in their lives as well.
Exactly. And it's not the kind of energy that you can't go to sleep.
Right. That's the nice thing, and that's what I always tell people. It's not going to be something that keeps you up like drinking a cup of coffee.
Hey, no, it's going to give you really strong, sustainable energy, energy that's there for you when you need it and want it.
Yes, good even keel.
Good even keel indeed. Are you going to write another book?
I have two more written at this point. They're not completely finished, but they're pretty darn close. And then I have three or four more that are sort of notes in my head, jotted down on paper, and when I get the opportunity to sit down and do them, I will.
And do they follow on the book you've written, things that you said, oh, gee, I wish I'd had time to put that in the first book, or are they on somewhat different themes?
Somewhat different. The first book that I just wrote, I titled it The Hands on Health, but it's called the Whole Food Kitchen Series, and every one of the other books will also be the Whole Food Kitchen Series. The next one is basically a book around working with kids and getting them on the whole food bandwagon early on in life so that you don't have – So you're preventing disease, and you don't have to change lifestyle habits with somebody who's 30, 40 years old. Teach them young. And then the other one that I have written is really, it's sort of an inspirational book. I find most of the people that I work with are women, and they have a lot of issues around food and letting go of things that are comfort for them, like ice cream. That seems to be like a huge one. And so it's a book of inspirational thoughts to help them think about life in a different way, open their mind to a different perspective, to hopefully help them move past those issues that they have around food and be able to let go of those issues.
I had a blessed childhood. My parents ran an ice cream stand. So I never knew life without plenty of ice cream.
And did you grow up where you are now in that area?
No, I was born on the shores of Lake Erie. I grew up in Dallas, Texas. I went to college at UCLA, moved to Manhattan, and have been living at my farm here, Laughing Rock Farm, since 1978.
Nice. Yeah. How long were you in Manhattan?
2 years, long enough to have a baby and to start bringing her up and say, hey, I don't want to do this in the city. I mean, granted, we spent all of our time at the Cloisters, you know, Central Park. We were out in nature as much as we possibly could be, but it's still the city.
Right, it's still Manhattan.
And I probably could have tolerated it for me, but for my infant daughter, I wanted her to have the opportunity to wander around naked in the world.
Yes, I agree. My kids ran naked for years.
Exactly, right? Without any raised eyebrows.
Right. Yes. Although the eyebrows. What's that?
it's their birthright as children.
Absolutely.
Completely free and to feel good about their bodies.
Yes, and have the wind and the sun and the rain on their skin.
Exactly.
Yes, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So one of the questions that you gave me that I could ask you is a question that I would never think of on my own. And almost makes me just a little embarrassed. But I'm going to ask you because it's an interesting question. What is the one thing you would change in your life if you could?
That's, I thought about that after I wrote it, and I thought, you know, I really have to say I am pretty darn happy with the path that I've walked and
yes.
all the things that I've learned along the way, and it just keeps getting better. More doors open up. What I wanted to do at one point in time, and I've held on to that want to do it, is go to naturopathic school. And it just always seemed like that wasn't the door at the time that needed to be open for me for various reasons. And I keep thinking about that. I'll be 55 when my youngest son is 18 and off into the world if that's where he heads. And I keep thinking, you know, will I want to go to naturopathic school then? So it's still in the back of my mind.
Hmm. What would it do for you?
What? That's what I keep saying to myself. What would it do at this point in time? You've done what you wanted to. You do the healing things you want to with people. I think it's just the constant desire to keep learning. And right now I'm doing an acupressure program because I love the whole concept of the acupressure points and the chakras and learning about the energy flow in the body, and it relates to yoga, and I think it's just a learning thing.
I think so, too. I mean, and the reason that I'm challenging you a little bit on it is because I get the impression from talking to you that you're a self-starter.
Very much so.
In other words, some people are self-starters, so you're going to say, I'm interested, I want to keep learning, and you're going to find things, you're going to be learning in your 90s. You're never going to stop. And some people need to have a curriculum and need to have teachers say, read this, do this.
Right, and I can just do it.
You can do it yourself, and more than that, I think that your path will unroll more holistically for you.
Well, that's kind of seems what it's done for 28, 30 years now. It just, when things need to open up, it's just like the last job that I had teaching in public school, it was cut because of New York State budget cuts. And I was skipping when they told me my job was going to be cut. I'm like, yes, now I can do what I want to do. and the superintendent of the school, he was just so caught up with it and trying to tell me about it. And then he looked at me and he goes, God, Paula, he said, I seem to be more upset about this than you. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm fine. When one door closes, so many more open. I'll be fine. And it did.
And I think you said that got you back into your more private counseling of people.
It did. It absolutely did. And
do you find that rewarding?
I love it. I love working with people, and I love writing. So the two of them go well together, as you know.
Indeed. although I tend to be the kind of writer who slams the door on everything when I sit down and write. Now, it's true, you know, I can dash off an 800-word article or, you know, 2,000-word article kind of in between doing other things. But when I'm sitting down to write a book, don't bother me.
Yeah,
so
I could probably do that way, too.
Back and forth between those states a little more than I do.
Yeah, I've had to with kids because, you know, they'll interrupt everything. And so I've had to learn to set it aside and go back to it. Although when I am writing, they know, leave mom alone, she's writing. She's writing an article. Leave her alone.
Yeah, exactly, right.
They don't do that when I'm doing yoga. They don't leave me alone.
Do you want them to?
Well, I tell them to, you know, if you could just give me a half an hour, that'd be really nice. But, things, you know, with kids, things always come up. And
I understand. And how old are your children now?
They are 11 and 14.
Oh, it'd be lovely ages.
Yeah, both boys.
Uh-huh. Really, I was teasing about leaving you alone. I was thinking maybe they would do yoga with you.
They used to when they were younger. And they've kind of, I don't know, they've moved out of that space. A lot of the things that I do, they like to pick on me, and it reminds me of me picking on my grandfather. And they, you know,
I was
going to
say, it reminds me of you picking on your granddad.
Yes. Why do you have to be so weird, Mom? Why can't you just be a normal mother?
Yes, indeed. Well, don't we always want our parents to be different than they were?
Yes. Yes.
Or than they are. Yes, that's just the way of it, isn't it?
Human nature.
Indeed. So if there's someone listening here who says, hey, I like this woman, Paula. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly? Umel?
Umel, yes.
Umel. Hey, I like this Paula Umel. I want to get in touch with her. Do they go to handsonhealthhh.com?
Yes, handsonhealthhh.com.
Okay.
And then my blog is wholefoodhealer.com.
Wholefoodhealer.com. And there you write about various whole food topics?
I do. Whole food topics. I give little herbal hints and recipe hints and just little fun things as they come up.
Oh, how marvelous. What a wonderful service you're providing to people. So I think that it's important for people as they transition into a whole food diet to have the kind of support that you're offering.
Yes, because most people are lost, and I've made updates and revisions to my first book that one of these days I'll get around to getting that revised edition out, because based on what people, one of the very first things that I was amazed at is how people really don't know what grows in what season. And I had to revise that whole chapter because, you know, I was asked questions about, well, what grows in what season? And by people that their families had always had a garden. So that was flabbergasting to me, that your grandparents and your parents always had a garden. You don't have any recollection to what was growing in what season? And I had one woman say to me, I can walk into the supermarket and I can get any fruit or vegetable from around the world any time of the year. Just tell me what grows in what season. Make this easy for me so I can go to Wegmans and get it.
You know what I always tell them is, you can tell by looking at the price.
Oh, that's true.
If it's inexpensive, it's probably in season. We've come to the last minute of the show, Paula Umel. What
wow.
would you like to leave the listeners thinking about?
Eat whole foods.
Eat whole foods. Check out handsonhealthhh.com and Paula Umel. Thank you, listeners, for joining me, Susan Weed, here as we reweave the healing cloak of the ancients and restore herbal medicine as people's medicine. Remember, green blessings are everywhere.